he finds her entirely satisfactory. In the desert of the week, Thursdays become an oasis of luxe et volupté. In bed, Soraya is not effusive. Her temperament is, in fact, rather quiet. Quiet and docile. In her general opinions, she's surprisingly moralistic. She's offended by tourists who bare their breasts, adas, she calls them, on public beaches. She thinks vagabonds should be rounded up and put to work sweeping the streets. How she reconciles her opinions with her line of business, he does not ask. Because he takes pleasure in her, because his pleasure is unfailing, an affection has grown up in him for her. To some degree, he believes, this affection is reciprocated. Affection may not be love, but it is at least its cousin. Given their unpromising beginnings, they've been lucky, the two of them, he to have found her, she to have found him. His sentiments are, he is aware, complacent, even uxorious. Nevertheless, he does not cease to hold to them. For a 90-minute session, he pays her 400 rand, of which half goes to discreet escorts. It seems a pity that discreet escorts should get so much, but they own number 113 and other flats in Windsor Mansions. In a sense, they own Soraya too, this part of her, this function. He's toyed with the idea of asking her to see him in her own time. He would like to spend an evening with her, perhaps even a whole night. But not the morning after. He knows too much about himself to subject her to a morning after, when he will be cold, surly, impatient to be alone. That is his temperament. His temperament is not going to change. He's too old for that. His temperament is fixed, set. The skull, followed by the temperament, the two hardest parts of the body. Follow your temperament. It is not a philosophy, he would not dignify it with that name. It is a rule, like the rule of St. Benedict. He is in good health. His mind is clear. By profession, he is, or has been, a scholar, and scholarship still engages intermittently the core of him. He lives within his income, within his temperament, within his emotional means. Is he happy? By most measurements, yes, he believes he is. However, he has not forgotten the last chorus of Oedipus. Call no man happy until he's dead. In the field of sex, his temperament, though intense, has never been passionate. Were he to choose a totem, it would be the snake. Intercourse between Soraya and himself must be, he imagines, rather like the copulation of snakes, lengthy, absorbed, but rather abstract, rather dry, even at its hottest. Is Soraya's totem the snake, too? No doubt with other men she becomes another woman, la donna immobile. Yet at the level of temperament, her affinity with him can surely not be feigned. Though by occupation she is a loose woman, he trusts her, within limits. During their sessions, he speaks to her with a certain freedom, even on occasion unburdens himself. She knows the facts of his life. She's heard the stories of his two marriages, knows about his daughter and his daughter's ups and downs. She knows many of his opinions. Of her life outside Windsor Mansions, Soraya reveals nothing. Soraya is not her real name, that he's sure of. There are signs she has borne a child or children. It may be that she's not a professional at all. She may work for the agency only one or two afternoons a week and for the rest live a respectable life in the suburbs, in Rylands or Athlone. That would be unusual for a Muslim, but all things are possible these days. About his own job, he says little, not wanting to bore her. He earns his living at the Cape Technical University, formerly Cape Town University College. Once a professor of modern languages, he has been since classics and modern languages were closed down as part of the great rationalization, adjunct professor of communications. Like all rationalized personnel, he is allowed to offer one special field course a year, irrespective